This is Table Talk with former California State Fire Marshal Ronnie J. Coleman and your host, Michael Williams.
Welcome to Table Talk with former California State Fire Marshal Ronnie J. Coleman and your host, Michael Williams. Today we're talking about recruitment and retention, both for the career firefighter as well as the volunteer. Chief, welcome to the table.
Well, we find ourselves here sitting at the same table again.
Funny how we keep doing that. Let's get into recruitment and retention. That is becoming an interesting challenge in the fire service, the volunteer service having its issues and the career service having their own. Let's start with the career. What kind of recruitment and retention challenges are we looking at right now with career firefighters and as we move into the next 10 to 20 years?
Well, it's going to be an interesting discussion because there is a huge world of differences between recruiting and retaining volunteers and recruiting and retaining paid people. Let's start with the paid people, as you suggest, and that is that right now, firefighters' jobs are highly desirable. We're not lacking for candidates who want to become firefighters. Hundreds of them show up for written exams, and as a matter of fact, in many cases, fire departments have had to issue lotteries and things of that nature in order to control the number of candidates. Whereas the volunteer fire service is on the opposite end of the spectrum in that fewer and fewer people are raising their hand and say, hey, I want to become a volunteer firefighter.
Well, let's get into that for just a second. Yes, the lines are long, but are those the type of individuals that the fire service of tomorrow is looking to recruit? Or is it people that fit a mold of what the fire service has been for the last 100 years?
Good question. I think that arguments could be made that a lot of people are self-selecting a fire service occupation based on what it used to be instead of what it's going to be. Mm-hmm. One of the frustrations I think that people are going to face over the next 15 or 20 years is that if you join the fire service because you think it's going to be a life of excitement and a life of being America's hero, you're bound to be set up for just a little bit of a disappointment. Because more and more what we're doing has to do with protecting the quality of life in our communities, including emergency medical services, hazardous materials calls, any number of types of activities. And moreover, the type of work that the fire service of the future may be doing is not going to look as much like the traditional fire service used to.
And that transition is already becoming quite dramatic. And that's why I was asking the question that especially for younger folks, I would say the folks of between 18 and 25, let's say, who are looking at the fire service as a career, what are they looking at? What they think they know or what they do know as to what the job actually entails? Because it's changing a lot.
Well, when it comes to talking about what people know about before they get into the fire service, I would characterize an awful lot of that as being mythological. It has to do with what they've seen on television, what they may have heard from family and friends, or what they may have read in books and so forth. Because the reality is that, got a little phone ringing here in the background. Sorry about that. The image of the fire service has changed considerably. The image had an awful lot to do with the portrayal of what the modern fire service used to look like. And what we're seeing is that the individuals who are self-selecting to come into that right now are basing their expectations on that image. They may or may not be aware of what is happening internal to the fire service. In fact, some of them don't really get the picture until they've been in the job for 10 or 15 years. Mm-hmm.
Now, we're going to talk about the future of the fire service in a separate table talk, but we talk about recruitment and retention. Most people, when they get into the fire service, certainly on the career side, they stay for a career unless they medical out for some reason or they move or what have you. That's unusual to a lot of other careers in this day and age where people stay fairly mobile. They're going from career to career. Their career is their field, not necessarily who they work for. And yet we look at the volunteer fire service, it's almost the exact opposite. Recruitment and retention is of a different type of individual. What kind of folks are getting into the volunteer side of the street?
There's two types of volunteers out there. One type is somebody who is actually very actively interested in becoming a full-time firefighter. They join a volunteer fire department to get a couple of things. One is experience. They get a chance to climb on a piece of apparatus, they get a chance to go on calls, they get a chance to pull hose, they get a chance to develop a skill set. The other type of volunteer is essentially somebody who's interested in protecting their community. I would characterize the nature of these two volunteers as being very, very closely linked with the demographics of a community. A good example would be a combination fire department that's near a suburban or metropolitan department may have a real high turnover of just young people wanting to get jobs.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, you go out in a very isolated community that there's nobody around for 50 miles. People join the volunteer fire service there because without them, nobody shows up. And there's two different groups of people. They are significantly different in their motivation. There's a significant difference in their skill sets. It's been my personal observation that those areas that are having high turnover because people want to get a job are basically taking their talent pool between 18 and 25. Those organizations that are trying to be community-based are taking their people from 25 to 40.
Oh, I would agree with that. And the other thing is the involvement and the attachment to the community and the volunteer service is much more profound in general than you're going to find in the career service. A career firefighter may not even live within 100 miles of where he's working, whereas a volunteer is living right there. So there's a community investment. Not a good thing or a bad thing. It's just a different mindset. From a chief's point of view, looking at it from the full-time career fire chief hiring career people, we'll start there. What type of individuals are ideal in today's world? Not last year and 10 years ago, but today now, guys coming in at 18 to 22, 25 years old. What's the ideal firefighter candidate look
like? Well, first off, you used the wrong word. You said guys.
Well, that's true, guys and gals.
Guys and gals. I would say that the word today on recruitment is diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean diversity by ethnic and racial and gender. I'm saying diversity in terms of a lot of things. Diversity in terms of expectations. Diversity in terms of desires. My belief is that the fire service of the future is going to have to look more like the community it protects. Now, a lot of people are going to argue the case that we've gone that route before. We've had consent decrees where people are being required to hire people to look like the community. But I'm talking about something more fundamental than that. If you have a community that has a language component to it, I'll give you a good example. I'm not going to name a city, but I know of several cities where a major component of their community speaks a specific language set that nobody in the fire department knows how to speak. Now, to me, that's a diversity issue.
Sure. You can't communicate with your community.
Can't communicate. Now, you know what happens in those communities? The youth of that community then becomes the channel of communication for the adults in that community. And when you go to a set of circumstances like that, and when your fire department does not look like the community, there's an issue of diversity.
Now, to take that same question and apply it to the volunteer, and I'm talking about full-time volunteer. I'm not talking about paid call, seasonal, but volunteers. What's the ideal candidate look like?
Somebody who looks like the community. I have the same thing. I use this phrase in my recruiting programs for volunteers, and that is, you are the community, and the community is you. You have to look like the community. You have to have the diversity. One of the things we strongly recommend people do is to do a census tract evaluation of their community. You need to look into things such as, what's the educational level in your community if you're a volunteer? What is the occupational orientation? I can show you fire departments, for example, that have huge staffing potential in agricultural communities, but nobody goes out and recruits the agricultural worker because they're not viewed as being part of the community.
So what we're looking at is utilizing something like ZipSkinny.
Yes.
Because ZipSkinny will tell you all those things, and it's free. Mm-hmm. And it'll give you demographic information, probably more than you thought was even available.
From my point of view, as a someone who's selecting people to enter the fire service, I think it's important for us to get to that diversity for a couple of reasons. One is to bring new skill sets into the fire service. What I mean by new skill sets is I'm talking about language, I'm talking about computer technology, I'm talking about management methodologies. The fire service is going to undergo a transition over the next couple of decades that has to do with us having to be more responsive to the all-risk phenomena, meaning we can't just be a fire department. Mm-hmm. We have to be something other than just a fire department.
Now, do you think that's going to create an environment where fire departments actually expand their human asset component, or is it going to cut back further than it already has?
This is a balancing act that's been going on for 100 years. My history tells me that at a point in time when we first started creating full-time paid positions, there was a significant change in the nature of the staffing of fire departments at the very most fundamental level. And I'm talking about metropolitan America, where we had six-man engine companies and eight-man trucks and six-man trucks and so forth. That's back when firefighters are making $89 a month.
Right.
Okay. As we've moved forward along that progression, I call it the continuum of change. As you move along the continuum of change, keeping the same staffing level and being able to afford that same staffing level has become mutually contradictory. There's two lines that go on. One of them is the amount of time, the amount of people that you have, and the other is the amount of cost that it costs to keep those people there. In my opinion, it's going to change.
Well, one of the definitive publications on this subject is put out by ISTA, The Future of Volunteer Fire and Rescue Services, Taming the Dragons of Change. It's a difficult book to get right now, but you can try on Google. But it is probably the single best book on this subject. And it talks about the four different types of fire departments, whether it be fully volunteer all the way up to your metropolitan, and the criteria in which a department needs to start thinking about making a transition from full-time volunteer to part mixed or what have you.
Seasonal. There's magic numbers associated with that. I jokingly call them magic numbers. They're not really magic as much as they are points of departure. And let me give you what I think they are. You show me a community that's got less than 5,000 people in it. They can't afford anything. If you paid through the nose for fire protection with only 5,000 or 6,000 people, you can't afford a lot. On the other hand, if you go to a metropolitan community that's got 2.5 million people living in 100 square miles, you'd better have the resources available to provide 24-hour-a-day staffing. The way I look at that is simply this. Populations from 0 to 5,000 are almost exclusively totally volunteer. Unless they're incorporated on some kind of a county basis or whatever, from 5,000 to, let's say, 20,000 people, it's not uncommon to have a mostly volunteer fire department. When you hit 20,000 people, from 20,000 on up, they become more and more paid. Once you hit 50,000 people, pretty much predominantly paid. And those numbers don't have anything to do with the intent of the department. They don't even have anything to do with the risk levels. They have to do with whether you can afford it or not.
Right. Well, you know, you brought up an interesting comment about the types of individuals that the career fire service is going to be looking for in the future. I would suggest that the volunteer fire service already has that diversity, because it's pulling from the community, which means your volunteers can be anything from a guy working in a gas station to an attorney to a physician to a corporate 500 business executive. We've seen volunteers who are executives with large, big-name movie production organizations, people that run law offices, people that have retired from public safety in the military, down to carpenters and engineers, electronics folks and things. You get the whole gamut. And all of that within a small organization, the resources that they subsequently have available to them, generally for free, is rather profound.
It's a different human resource management phenomena when you're running a volunteer fire department with that kind of diversity and when you're running a career department with the same type of complexity. One of my favorite stories was early on in my career, I had a chance to make friends with a world-class surgeon who was a volunteer firefighter. Guy traveled all over the world, was paid, you know, six-digit figures for conducting operations, and yet he was assistant chief on a volunteer fire department. What we're really talking about here is, let's go back to the basic premise of community and the demographics of that community. There are certain communities that have absolutely no fire protection at all, and they have to get by with whatever they can put together. There are other communities that are so large that without an adequate fire protection force, they're in constant danger, metropolitan communities. The balancing act that goes on between every one of those different levels requires a different skill set. You got to be paying really close attention to where you're recruiting from and what you want those people to be in order to develop an organization that meets the needs.
You know, I kind of noticed two different types of fire organizations, whether they're career, volunteer, federal, state, or what have you. There are the fire organizations who are trying to force onto the community a level of service, whatever it may be that that fire organization feels that their community needs. And then there's the fire organizations that are responding to the needs that the fire needs of the community are stating. So you've got a push mentality and you have a receive mentality. It seems as though the pushing doesn't work as well as the receiving, where you're providing the service that you're being asked to provide versus telling people what you're going to do.
Good question and good item to start a really big argument in a firehouse with. Essentially what you just said, and I'll summarize it in a slightly different way. Sometimes communities know what they want and ask for it. Mm-hmm. Other times community asks someone else to tell them what they ought to do, and then they quarrel over the price.
Or that it's more than they wanted.
Or it's more than they wanted. From my point of view, community expectations are a critical part of setting service levels. Most full-time paid career fire departments do not have a strong linkage with the stakeholders to determine the level of service. It's driven by the staff expertise of the members of the department or consultants who come in from the outside and say, this is how many fire stations you need. Whereas the volunteer fire service is almost always, and when I say this, I mean it in the best possible way. I don't mean it as a criticism, but a lot of volunteer fire services are functioning on the very ragged edge of expectation. They're able to do some good stuff, but they're not always as well resourced as they should be, but they're still getting along.
Well, they're coupled with that is the financial support of it, the political support of it, the staffing, as well as the training and oversight. It would be very easy to get in over your head, perhaps not even realize that you are over your head until it's too late, particularly in the volunteer environment. But there's certainly full-time career departments that try to extend themselves out farther than perhaps they've got the budgets to do that with.
A man's grasp should not exceed his reach.
Well, Harry Callahan said it best, a man's got to know his limitations.
Got to know your limitations. Well, we're talking here about recruiting and retention, and those are two different things, especially when it comes to the two different environments. Let me make this point about volunteers. Retaining firefighters is more important than recruiting new ones.
Right? Oh, absolutely. It's easier, too.
It's easier. When it comes to the paid fire force, recruiting the right people to do the job in the future is more important than anything.
Well, there's a HR motto that says you hire your problems, and that's true of all occupations, not unique to the fire service. But the types of problems that you hire within a career organization are a little more different than what you're going to have in a volunteer organization. And the tolerance levels are going to be different. Also, within a career organization, there's the disciplinary process, there's pay, there's overtime, there's all these different tools that management has to keep everybody in line and going in the same direction. Don't necessarily have that quite so much in the volunteer service. How do you get people to go with the flow? That puts an enormous burden on your chief and his chief officers in the leadership arena in trying to keep everything moving and functioning without the advantage of being able to dock people pay or time off or all the other rudimentary things that management has to make things happen.
In my experience, the skill set that is utilized by a fire chief is directly related to the demographics of what they're trying to protect. There's a significant difference between the career track of a metropolitan fire chief than there is a suburban fire chief. Now, there are people who move up through the suburban ranks and maybe even become metro chiefs, but they're a rarity. Most of the people who start off and finish up in the metro arena started there. The same way with the volunteer fire service. There's a big difference between very small volunteers and very large volunteers. But what's interesting to me is that there's still a basic set of core competencies. You can't become a chief without having a good grasp of finance and a good grasp of human resources and a good grasp of policy and procedure and so forth. The difference is scalability. The scope of what you're doing is what starts making a difference. Let's talk a little bit about professional mobility from the bottom up. Most people, when they start their fire service careers, don't start where they end up. They start somewhere, and then they start developing assets to be able to promote to higher levels of responsibility. It's not uncommon for people to start off as a volunteer firefighter, become a paid firefighter, then go be a chief of a volunteer fire department. You follow what I'm saying here?
Yeah.
The core competencies of running a department have to do with the size of the department, but they're all the same. Now, when it comes to the recruiting and retention of people, there are different targets that each of those groups has to pursue. We've talked about the future of the fire service. We're going to discuss that maybe on a later period of time, but one of the things I think you have to recognize is when you hire someone, you're anticipating who they're going to be 20 years from today. You're anticipating that they're going to evolve to become something 20 mm-hmm. years later. You and I were talking earlier about in some military organizations in other countries, the firefighters, if they don't promote up by the time they're 30 years old, they're out.
Yeah. Moving up or moving out.
You move up or you move out. Our system is not that way. Our system is move up until you can't move any further.
Well, when we get into the issue of retention, that's also very unique between the career side and the volunteer side. I think the career fire service doesn't really have much of a retention problem, nothing that I've ever come
nope.
across. The volunteer side obviously has a huge retention problem because what keeps people staying and dealing with the training and the calls in the middle of the night and all the other aspects of being a volunteer firefighter. We're kind of spoiled in a lot of ways on California with volunteers because we don't have to deal with the weather elements as much as you do back east. Being a volunteer back east in the winter is a big deal.
Well, I would also say that there are differences in the cultures of organizations depending upon how long they've been doing what they're doing. I can show you volunteer fire departments back in the East Coast that have been around since the 1700s. And yet I'll show you fire departments in California that started off as volunteer departments in 1954 that were paid by 1962.
Well, you and I have toured all over California for years now, and we've been in volunteer fire departments and stations and around places that unless you knew they were volunteer, you wouldn't know they were volunteer.
It's true.
It's amazing. So, you know, the word volunteer becomes problematic in and of itself because it has so many different definitions to so many different people.
Yeah, I think what I'd like to characterize in this discussion, Mike, is not so much recruiting and retention as the concept of professional development. What we're really talking about here is getting the right people to do the right job the right way. And it varies according to the scope and complexity of the organization. If you're out there listening to this program, there's a real basic question you ought to ask yourself. Where are you in the system? At what level are you in the system? What kind of a system are you within? If you're a volunteer listening to this, do you want to become a paid firefighter someday? There's professional development processes you have to engage in.
Well, I would add, whether you're a career firefighter or you're a volunteer, what are you contributing to your organization? Mm-hmm. Are you helping the organization, or are you just sitting back waiting to collect?
Along for the ride.
Well, we're at the end of this segment, Chief. Any closing thoughts?
Well, I'm not sure I got a closing thought as much as a transition thought. The idea that we talk about recruiting and retention may seem like kind of gilding the lily. We really don't have a problem with people who want to become firefighters. There's tens of thousands of kids going through community colleges that plan on becoming a firefighter. The question is, are they all going to land a job, and are they going to have a satisfactory lifestyle as a direct result of being part of it? Recruiting and retention is a reflection of satisfaction and community expectation.
Well, with that, we end our current episode of Table Talk. Till next time, let's be safe out there.
This has been Table Talk with Ronald J. Coleman and Michael S. Williams. Produced and distributed by the Fire Services Training Institute. Production assistance by Mark A. Ward. Special thanks to Chief Michael Dyer and the Santa Barbara County Fire Department. Remember, train like your life depends on it, because it does.
Table Talk programming is intended for personal and organizational use only. Any duplication or commercial use is prohibited.